From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck On Demand. I'm John Schaefer. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand, created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and online at WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer, and boy, nothing says luxury vehicle like Led Zeppelin. At least that was true for a while, up to a few weeks ago. Cadillac recently dropped the song after an aggressive 4-year ad campaign looking for a song that would give their car a different image. The question today is, does the song make the ad? And these days, can an ad break a new band? We're joined today by a couple of guests, but I'm going to start with Josh Rabinowitz, who is Senior Vice President of Music at the ad agency Gray Worldwide, which operates its own in-house music department. Josh, very basic question to start. How does a song sell a product?
Well, sound is a wonderful thing because it stays with you forever. The auditory and cognitive aspects of our personality and our anatomy, it's been proven scientifically that melodies stick with people forever. And that's why jingles were so successful over the years. And I'm a big fan of sound, and we try to create great, recognizable, memorable sound that resonates with concepts.
All right, now Gray Worldwide has its own in-house music department. What does that mean? When you guys are trying to sell something and use sound, are you creating something from scratch or looking for hit tunes of the past?
Both. What we generally do is, if we're creating original music, we oversee the project. We oversee the entire project and we guide the process. We hire composers, writers, bands, musicians, and come up with original material, or we do music supervision, like for films, and we come up with song ideas and see if they resonate with the concept.
All right, so a couple of years back, Pringles, makers of styrofoam-flavored potato chips, come to you and say, you know, we want a new ad campaign. Walk us through the process by which you came up with a pretty effective use of a very familiar old song.
Right, the concept was, it came from the creatives, the same but different. Basically, if you apply it to the chip, it's the same chip every time, but it's different compared to bag chips.
Right.
So we kind of carried that over to the concept of making the music. So taking the same song that existed famously and doing it differently, making it brand ownable, making it distinctive and applicable to the brand.
All right. And so this basically is it's a re-recording, it's a recasting of a familiar song.
It's a cover version, correct.
New, old, but new again.
Yes.
All right. This is the song that was used for the Pringles ad campaign. All right, so that's what Gray Worldwide came up with for Pringles, a cover, as Josh Rabinowitz just told us. He's the Senior Vice President of Music at Gray Worldwide. Joining us now on the phone is Charles Duhigg. He's staff writer at the Los Angeles Times, where he covers the music industry. And Charles, why do you think pop music, whether newly made or, as in this case, a cover of an older song, why is it so important to advertising these days?
Well, I think music has the power to specify very, very quickly what audience the advertiser is trying to talk to. So one of the nice things about pop music is that it's very familiar to young people. It sounds like it's young, and you can say very, very quickly, this ad is intended for you, and you know because of what type of music you're hearing.
So we began with the Led Zeppelin song for the Cadillac campaign. I mean, I know growing up, I never, ever in a million years would have associated the brand Cadillac with the sounds of Led Zeppelin. So clearly they were trying to target a very different demographic from, say, your parents' Cadillac
Exactly.
Alders.
That's exactly what they were trying to do. I mean, it's a really smart use of the song when you think about it, because what they're basically saying to baby boomers is exactly what you just said. This isn't your parents' Cadillac anymore, and we're signaling that by playing music that you identify with sort of counter-establishmentism and, you know, other revolutionary things to make you reconsider what this brand should represent.
Uh-huh. So be a revolutionary, drive a caddy.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Given what's going on right now in the automotive industry, it's unclear how deep, how much that message took hold, but it's a smart advertising approach.
Okay. As we mentioned, you know, that 4-year campaign has now come to an end. Do you read anything into that in terms of, I mean, 4 years is a good long run, right?
I mean, 4 years is a long time to use one song, and I don't know that you can read anything into it except beyond what's true in the entire music industry, which is that, you know, songs have a certain shelf life, and after right. a while, they tend to lose their pop.
Right. Josh, I mean, within the ad industry, was that considered a particularly strong ad campaign, a particularly strong use of music?
It certainly was. It was revolutionary in many ways because of the fact that it's Led Zeppelin. But one interesting point is you find that people use the same song on different products, and that can drive people insane. For instance, Magic Carpet Ride is heard on 4 different campaigns for 4 different products. More and more and more, how do you like it, how do you like it,
mm-hmm.
and It's Your Thing. It drives me insane if I hear It's Your Thing. I hear it all the time.
So a song like Anticipation by Carly Simon,
mm-hmm.
no one's ever going to use that again because it's so intimately associated with ketchup at this point.
I would hope not.
Okay. Charles, what can an ad campaign, especially a high visibility one that runs on network TV, what can that do to change not the course of the company selling the product, but the course of the song?
There was a time in the music industry where having your song used in a commercial was considered selling out, and a lot of artists would run away from it. In the last 5 years, that sentiment has almost completely disappeared. Now a lot of managers and a lot of bands recognize that it's so hard to get a new band discovered or to get a song heard that they'll have it played anywhere. Commercials, television shows, etc. In fact, one of the most powerful kind of new music discovery things out there right now are TV shows like Grey's Anatomy and The OC,
right.
which a number of bands like Death Cab for Cutie have essentially been discovered by young audiences through. And so a lot of bands are more than willing and very, very eager to have their songs featured in commercials because that's where the mass audience is going to hear them for the first time. And there's CD compilations of songs heard in commercials now. Etc.
Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, our third guest joining us on Soundcheck for this segment is Dan Massey, who is the songwriter and leader of the band Hem, based here in New York. And Dan, your band, as Charles was just saying, very happy to have Liberty Mutual use one of your songs, not only in their commercial, but basically the whole commercial shot around your song.
It was really a lifesaver for us, to be honest. It definitely came at exactly the right time. It helped finance our new album that just got released. And we're basically able to market our new album because of this commercial.
So how did it happen?
As it turns out, Sally Ellison, our singer's husband, works in advertising. And so the music was sort of known by a number of producers. And they had this campaign for Liberty Mutual that they were working on that had this really sweet message, and they thought that our music would be right for it. So they came out and saw us live in LA, and we started the conversation, and they showed us the film, which we loved. It was this really sweet idea that I didn't mind having our music associated with.
Right, the idea being the quote-unquote random acts of kindness. Somebody does something nice for someone, there's a third person watching, they go, they do something nice for someone, and it just becomes like a chain reaction.
Exactly.
So you were eager to agree to this because the message was good. If it had been, you know, the NRA, you know, selling packages of guns, alcohol, and firearms, would you have been so eager to sign up?
You know, we talked about that a lot, like what, you know, are we going to, you know, sell our music for Tux medicated pads. And, yeah. I mean, to be honest, you know, I think that in our career, like we have these sort of two touchstone artists that have always been our inspiration in terms of both musically and in their career. One's Randy Newman, one's Tom Waits. Tom Waits made it clear he would never, ever use his music in commercials. Well, Randy Newman made it clear that you know, music is, he comes from the Tin Pan Alley sort of school where music is a product like anything else. And
he's written very effective scores for films and TV shows and kids' movies and stuff like that.
Exactly. And so I think that in the end, our Tin Pan Alley soul won out over our... but it also didn't hurt that we're... You know, like a lot of bands these days, we're our own business. We own our own masters. You know, we had been associated with major labels in the past, and we wound up in this place where we owned our own masters. And when we were thinking about whether to sign again with a major, you know, we thought, well, if we get one placement in an advertisement, that would be much more money than any of these advances are going to be. And as it turned out, the money from the Liberty Mutual was about five times as much as we would have gotten signed to a major label.
That's a topic I want to pick up with Josh Rabinowitz, because you've written about this, about the idea of the advertising agency is taking over the role of the record label in some sense. But first, here's the ad for Liberty Mutual featuring the music by Dan Massey and the band Hem.
They call it being responsible. When it's an insurance company, they call it Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy? Liberty Mutual.
All right, that's the song from the band Hem, who've appeared here on Soundcheck on a number of occasions, and songwriter Dan Massey is with us as we're talking about songs and sales, music and the advertising business. So Liberty Mutual using that piece, the song Half Acre. And if you would like to see the ad, there's a link on our website, the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org. It is a beautifully done advertisement. Josh Rabinowitz, Senior VP of Music at Gray Worldwide. We were talking before about, you know, whether Led Zeppelin was sort of an automatic association with a brand like Cadillac. Does that song, divorced from the, you know, the visuals that accompany it, does that say insurance to you somehow, or does it say something different?
Well, I don't think it necessarily says insurance, but if you see it with the visual, it certainly connects. And I think that's a very important thing to think about when you're dealing with advertising. It's how things resonate with ideas and how they elevate ideas and how they help persuade people to do things with ideas.
And Charles Duhigg at the L.A. Times, the sound of this piece, it sort of, you know, immediately says not an insurance ad, right?
it's kind of interesting how they, when companies try and use juxtapositions of songs that you wouldn't expect to see with a particular product. I mean, obviously, they're trying to kind of shock you into reexamining this product. I mean, that being said, you know, I wrote a piece about sort of this practice, and one of the things that people said a lot was, look, you can line things up incorrectly. So if you're advertising an insurance company, it's unclear whether you want to be talking to, you know, young hipsters who normally listen to Hem, and I'm a big fan of Hem, or if you want to be talking to other people who perhaps carry things into listening to Hem that you don't want associated with your company. And a lot of the classic rock stuff is a perfect example of this. I mean, for everyone who signifies Led Zeppelin with, you know, their first kiss and kind of the spirit of revolution when they were young, there's someone else who maybe, you know, associates Led Zeppelin with the boyfriend they broke up with and that they
hate, and
a period in their life when they didn't feel particularly responsible. So it's a double-edged sword, and it's not always clear that what a song means to one person, it means to everyone else.
Well, what does it mean to the band that records the song in the first place in terms of getting a boost in visibility and perhaps even a more pointed question, a boost in the sales figures?
You mean to be featured in a commercial like
yep.
this? It's,
yep.
It's huge. It's huge. But to the point that you made before that I wanted to touch on whether that's replacing what the music label does. You know, there's a number of people out there who have said that they think that the music labels are dead and that advertising companies as well as others can kind of take over that responsibility. I don't I don't necessarily think that that's true. I mean, there's a lot that a music label does that an advertising company won't be able to do.
Right.
And simply getting your song featured in a commercial won't make the band.
Okay, well, I mean, there's a lot to that that I want to try and get to after we take a break. So we'll continue our conversation with Charles Duhigg, who's on the phone, staff writer for the LA Times, with Josh Rabinowitz, who's senior vice president of music at Grey Worldwide, and with Dan Massey of the band Hem, all of them with us on Soundcheck. We'll have more in a moment.
WNYC is supported by Sony Pictures Classics, presenting American Hardcore, a new film by Paul Rackman that examines the hardcore punk rock scene of the early 80s and its influence on popular music and culture, starts Friday. The Valley Hospital's Total Joint Replacement Center, performing knee and hip replacement surgery using advanced computer-guided technology to help improve joint stability and range of motion. 1-800-VALLEY-1 or valleyhealth.com.
You know, I seem to be healthy.
Woody Allen with Studio 360's Kurt Anderson.
I don't want to jinx myself and say anything, and then it'll be an ironic story. He was talking to Kurt, and, you know, and then he keeled over 10 minutes later. But
this tape will be very valuable.
I seem to be healthy, so I assume that, you know, I will go on making films as long as the ideas come and people fund me.
Studio 360, weekends on WNYC.
Merkin Concert Hall at the Kaufman Center supports WNYC and presents Broadway Close Up, a look at lyricist David Zappel, who has collaborated with many composers, including Cy Coleman and Marvin Hamlisch. More information, merkinconcerthall.org. WNYC has one pair of tickets for that concert on Monday, September 25th at 8 p.m., and we'll give that pair of tickets to the fourth caller to reach us at 212-669-7675. As long as that fourth caller hasn't won anything from us in the past 30 days.
Oh, I'm newly calibrated. Oh, shiny and clean. I'm your recent adaptation.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. In a little while, our studio will be crowded with members of the band Lamb Chop, who will be performing for us. But right now, we're talking about music and advertising on the program. You can contribute your two cents by emailing us, soundcheck@wnyc.org. Last year, Kellogg paid a bit more than 2 cents to the Atlanta pop rock band Collective Soul, more than $200,000, in fact, to use this song, Better Now, in an ad for their Special K cereal. And, of course, you can see classic artists like Bob Dylan in the latest round of ads for iPods. So let me once again bring in Charles Duhigg from the L.A. Times. Charles, does this signal a real shift among artists, this willingness, in fact, this eagerness now to be embraced by the advertising business?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's still a number of sort of classic rock bands, including The Doors, who will refuse to let their stuff be used in commercials.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that there's so many younger bands now that are eager to be featured in advertisements for life insurance or cars definitely signals that the spirit of anti-consumerism from the 1960s that infused rock and roll has probably gone away a little bit at this point.
Right. And as you mentioned in our first segment, you know, in the early days, if a rock artist was used in a commercial, the immediate response was, oh, they're selling out.
Right. Right, and that's definitely faded away. And in large part, it's just because it's so much harder to get discovered now. You know, radio isn't what it once was, and so basically artists are desperate to find ways to let new potential fans hear their music.
Dan Massey of the band Hem, you seem like a perfect example. Any qualms, any kind of internal discussion among the band members before you signed on the dotted line, are we selling out here?
We never asked that question. I mean, we asked the question, do we want our music associated with this particular product? But we never had a question of, is this a bad thing for the band to be doing? I mean, we are under no illusions that our music is ever going to get on Clear Channel Radio in any real way, and we understand all too clearly that the only way to reach mass audiences is through TV, movies, and advertisements.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, some of the advertisements we'd seen were some of the more beautiful music videos we'd ever seen. You know, some of the Iron and Wine being used on the Eminem commercial is just gorgeous. We talked about the Nick Drake being used by Volkswagen. I mean, those are just really nice spots.
Josh Rabinowitz, Senior VP of Music at Gray Worldwide. To me, whoever Volkswagen has been working with in the past X number of years has been incredibly ear-opening to lots of bands that I hadn't heard before. And, of course, hearing Nick Drake's Pink Moon, you know, whenever that campaign run was like a jolt. It was like, that's Nick Drake coming out of my television. Who was that they were working with?
Back then it was Arnold Advertising in Boston, and now they've taken it to a very hot shop out of Miami called Crispin Porter.
Mm-hmm. Very progressive stuff. Here is that Nick Drake song, Pink Moon.
Is on its way. None of you stand so tall. Pink moon, and I get you.
All right, Charles Duhigg out in L.A. at the L.A. Times. Nielsen SoundScan, the company that sort of keeps track of how many records are selling, has said that ad campaigns do not generate a meaningful uptick in sales for the songs used in them. I know for a fact that Nick Drake's Pink Moon was not selling a whole heck of a lot of copies before this Volkswagen ad campaign, and that changed in a big way. Is that an exception that proves the rule, or, you know, does Nielsen somehow, are they missing something here?
I haven't seen that Nielsen study myself, so I can't comment on it. But I will say that I think you're exactly right. For that Nick Drake song, as well as for Iron and Wine, is another great example. You know, whether it translates directly into sales that very minute or whether it helps create an awareness of the band, you know, a lot of those things are hard to measure. So I'm not sure that many people had ever heard of Iron and Wine or The Shins, which was the song that Iron and Wine covered before the Eminem commercial. But once you hear that, you become aware of that song, and you hear it again in a music store. You might ask who plays that album, who it is, and then buy the album. So it's not so much that you're trying to draw a direct line from a commercial to sales of a CD or a single, as much as you are just trying to create awareness of the band itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other thing that's potentially interesting to look at here is how it translates into concert sales. Since for most artists, their concerts are actually where they make most of their money, it'd be really interesting to know how much a public awareness through commercials translates into people actually going and seeing a show. You know, Death Cab for Cutie is a great example. I went to see them the other day at the Greek Theater here in L.A., and it was packed with teenagers who I was somewhat shocked were Death Cab for Cutie fans, because it's not a particularly young band. But then I remembered that their song had been featured on The OC, which is very popular among teenagers.
Right.
And so I think that there's probably some carryover there.
Dan, the Liberty Mutual ad is a recent one. Have you had time yet to see any kind of response in Hem concerts?
It's interesting. Like, I think that that study is right, though. I mean, we didn't see an appreciable jump in sales of Rabbit Songs, which is what the album is from. We got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, and still getting hundreds of letters from people who loved the commercial and just thought it was a nice thing, and I guess want to just express that they like it.
Yeah.
But in terms of sound scans and selling records, it's nothing compared to like getting featured on like All Things Considered, which we just were at a review on All Things Considered. The next day we were in the top 10 of Amazon. I mean, it's like that sort of result. It doesn't do that.
All right. Well, this can sort of allow us to circle back to something that one of you guys raised earlier, but which, Josh, I wanted you to weigh in on, and that is the idea that the advertising community is sort of taking a role that the record labels used to perform and seem to be performing with increasing ineffectiveness these days, namely nurturing and promoting new artists.
It's true. It's such a great opportunity for independent artists that can't get any airplay to get a song on a commercial. The record labels, you know, for the most part, are not developing artists like they used to. They're trying to get the quick hit. And that's also why they are really psyched about getting involved in advertising. Some of these really mainstream brands will spend upwards of $1 million a week on a media buy, and they're playing the spot all the time on network. I've been involved with a lot of projects like that where the song is just getting instant access to millions and millions of eardrums and eyeballs, Super Bowl spots, for instance. You know, the impact is huge. And these record labels are really pumped up because if they're going to spend money on Britney Spears, they're not going to spend $1 million a week on promoting it, where they can just jump onto a commercial and get promoted as such.
Well, but I suppose they could also say it's Britney Spears. We don't need to spend $1 million a week. Whereas if they actually had a Hem or, you know, an Iron and Wine or a Lamb Chop on their roster, that they might, you know, in order to really break the band, they might have to invest that kind of time and money.
They certainly will. And also the sync fees that are paid to them are really big fees. And this helps these people because a lot of the artists don't have to pay that money back to the label for their recoupable advance. I believe that they're allowed to keep 50% of that money for themselves.
All right. Speaking of Lamb Chop, we're going to need to wrap this up in just a minute because the band is here and is going to play for us. But let me come back to something, Josh, that you wrote in an opinion piece in Billboard magazine. And I'll throw this quote right back in your face. Eventually, an original tune, recorded and created specifically for an ad, will be the best-selling song in the United States.
Yeah.
So is that what you guys are doing at Grey Worldwide in the music division? Are you trying to create a song that will not only be an effective ad, but then go on to become a hit tune?
Certainly trying. Right now, we just did a commercial for Monopoly. I don't know if you've heard, Monopoly is relaunched. And the new tokens on Monopoly are a Starbucks coffee cup, a New Balance shoe, a computer. Pretty radical. And it makes a lot of sense in terms of the environment, the cultural and sociological environment these days.
What about Kmart?
Kmart. We've done some things with Kmart where we took a jingle called I Found Love in a Kmart Store and then had Kmart on their own release a CD with a country artist, Daryl Worley, which was available only at stores through Kmart. And, you know, it ran for 10 weeks. So the media buy is extraordinary.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there with Daryl Worley and the aforementioned I Found Love in a Kmart. We've been speaking with Josh Rabinowitz, Senior Vice President of Music at Grey Worldwide, with Charles Duhigg, staff writer at the LA Times, who covers the music industry, and with Dan Massey of the band Hem. To the three of you, thank you all for joining us this afternoon. Real pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having
us.
Thank you.
And Hem has a gig on Saturday at Irving Plaza, so you can see and hear what the band's all about then. And in a moment, you'll have a chance to hear the group Lamb Chop with their mix of country, soul, jazz, and avant-garde sounds coming up on Soundcheck. Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Each day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. Thanks.